for your excellencies, Mr. Chamberlain. Brothers and sisters, it's a great privilege to be invited to address you this morning. As Joe said, what I would like to do this half hour is to continue the reflection that has been going on since yesterday, also particularly taking into consideration some of the practical work that Mary Dennis spoke about the Franciscan family and our involvement in practical ecumenism, in working in practical ways to build a more just, peaceful and integrated world. I would like to expand a little bit this morning as well, not only to talk about Franciscans, but many other religious who are involved in peacemaking, peacebuilding. The very title of this talk, Building Blocks for Creating a Just Society, is a reminder to work for a more just and peaceful world. It's plainly evident that we live in an unjust world where the poorest 40% of the world's population account for 5% of global income, and the richest 20% account for 3/4 of the world's income. Recently, the JPIC Commission of the USG, UISG, which is the Superiors General of Men and Women, published a booklet entitled Guide Us in Your Justice, a Formation Itinerary for Prophetic Religious Life. It's available in many languages. This is with the intention of helping incorporate Catholic social teaching and JPIC values into the life and ministry of religious institutes through initial and ongoing formation programs. The authors are clear that if Catholic social teaching is not to remain its best kept secret, an integral approach is needed of both intellectual knowledge of the doctrine and practical experiences of its implementation in the church and in the world. There needs to be a circular and reciprocal ongoing interaction between orthodoxy and orthopraxis, sustained by a contemplative attitude, with each dimension mutually enriching the other. Abstract principles must be made concrete, or Catholic social teaching and justice, peace, and integrity creation will remain practically irrelevant. Following on Cardinal Turkson's reflection from the perspective of Catholic social teaching and justice, peace, and integrity creation, and Mary Dennis's extensive overview of Franciscan involvement with others in peacemaking, peacekeeping, and peacebuilding, I propose to present a number of examples, 12 examples if I have time, on what religious men and women are doing around the world with others to defend and to promote just, life-giving, and sustainable societies for every person. They include a focus on the promotion and defence of human dignity, as well as efforts to maintain healthy ecosystems, which is the sine qua non of survival for all God's creatures. So, these examples, I will try to focus in on 5 different values, some of which the Cardinal spoke about: the promotion and the defence of human dignity. 2, tolerance and acceptance of diversity. 3, solidarity and fraternity. Prophecy and advocacy. And finally, sustainability. In 2004, Sister Ana Martinez de Lugo, a Carmelite sister, decided to live on the streets in New York to get to know the group who made their living recycling tin cans. She learned to walk with the people, to listen to them, and to trust in Providence. Initiated in 2007 in New York, the Sure We Can project is a system for collecting and redeeming recyclable cans, containers, to mutually benefit those who depend on it for their livelihood and for the benefit of the city of New York. The project helps to reduce the volume of non-degradable, recyclable materials from dump sites and provides a real job, in particular for the homeless and for those who earn a living by picking up cans in New York. The goal of the project is to become a prototype facility where the collectors of recyclable materials are accepted and respected, and where their work is facilitated, appreciated, and done in a clean and civic environment. This is achieved by paying full value per item, providing training to identify what they can recycle, treating people with dignity, enlightening clients about environmental benefits of their work, and fostering a more inclusive society. It is hoped that the centre will eventually be managed by the workers themselves. Ethnic, religious and racial strife are unfortunate realities in our world. And many religious communities are working for greater tolerance between peoples and nations. And as with all social justice efforts, long-term efficacy is generally linked to personal transformation of the people working for such change. For religious communities, it is imperative that they give witness to tolerance and acceptance of differences among themselves. The Franciscan Missionaries of Mary are giving such a witness in Sri Lanka, a country ravaged by civil war and dealing with the consequences of an imposed peace. The country is divided along ethnic lines between the majority Sinhalese and the minority Tamil communities. Surely the living witness of a religious community of more than 150 women from both ethnic backgrounds living together bears testimony to the fact that harmony and acceptance, not without difficulties, is possible. This is more extraordinary in the light of the fact that such an ideal is not always achieved, even by other Christians and other religious. Unfortunately, many religious communities have had to divide themselves along ethnic lines. An important ingredient in this process is good communication. When misunderstandings arise, especially due to manipulated reporting on the part of the mass media or others, the sisters are encouraged to search together for clarity and truth. At times, they may agree to disagree. And this is done in charity, trying to respect feelings and other points of view. English is spoken in all communities as a matter of policy, whereas in the apostolate, the language of the people is used. All sisters are encouraged to learn both languages, Sinhalese and Tamil. From the time you move and enter the congregation and throughout our initial and ongoing formation, the importance of witnessing to ethnic harmony is continuously encouraged as an integral part of Franciscan life. The people appreciate mixed communities and often comment on it, asking how such a thing is possible. Members of other faith communities often express their appreciation as well. Government officials are aware of these mixed communities. It often happens, for example, that in a predominantly Sinhalese Buddhist area, a Tamil sister is principal of the nursery school, or is in charge of a swimming centre where the women and girls are all Sinhalese. Similarly, Sinhalese sisters are in charge in predominantly Tamil Hindu areas. And during the most difficult days of the recent war, when animosities were strong, the Tamils were threatened in predominantly Sinhalese areas, and the Sinhalese sisters in those communities protected the Tamils and vice versa. The idea for a UN decade was first proposed in March 2006 by an international group of volunteers belonging to different religious spiritual traditions and linked to several interfaith organisations. This proposal was an initiative for a UN decade of interreligious and intercultural dialogue, understanding and collaboration for peace. And after a long process of consultation, the idea of creating a spiritual forum in the United Nations developed into a decade project. A significant step forward took place at a three-day meeting in Geneva in January 2008, hosted by the World Council of Churches. 46 people gathered, including representatives of international interfaith organizations, representatives from diverse religious traditions, representatives from some member states committed to the project, and advisors from some UN agencies. The USUISG was one of the Catholic organizations represented. A consensual collective proposal for the decade emerged with the election of a steering committee to bring the idea forward, which included two representatives from the USUISG religious groups were invited to support the initiative. And since then, the religious NGOs at the UN have been lobbying governments in the hope of achieving the goal of grassroots collaboration by faith-based organizations for a more peaceful world, to be concretized in a declaration by the United Nations of a decade for peace. But for a variety of reasons, which I'm not going to go into now, there's no time, it does not seem possible to achieve the decade as envisaged. Now the supporters of the idea for a practical ecumenism under the banner of the United Nations are developing interim programs of cooperation by faith organizations and groups for peace. Tolerance and understanding and friendship can be built through practical involvement by people in the work for peace. Instead of beginning from a theoretical perspective or theoretical reflections on what unites and what divides us, this visionary proposal believes that it is through concrete actions benefiting every person and whole communities, regardless of their religious or ethnic background, that divisions and prejudices can be eventually overcome. And the next stage of reflection is underway, as we speak, in identifying particular projects such as, for example, aiding refugees and migrants, to be undertaken by faith-based organizations in connection with existing structures or organizations. For example, from the Catholic Church point of view, the Jesuit Refugee Service and others. And the idea of a decade has been temporarily shelved, but not forgotten. Looking at the whole aspect of solidarity and fraternity, I'd like to just share with you an example which is really a new paradigm of mission. When the war ended in South Sudan in July 2002, members of the JPIC Commission of International Institutes of Women and Men Religious were asked to help, particularly to train nurses and teachers. This simple invitation led to the establishment of what is now known as Solidarity with the South Sudan Project. Initially, 80 religious, international religious institutes pledged their collective support to establish a joint mission. Traditionally, religious institutes, we tend to act quite alone. The South Sudan model is a new paradigm of mission. And on January 1st, 2008, since then, there are 24 religious working together in 6 locations. The religious are from 12 different congregations and 13 different nationalities. One focus is on teacher training, because in South Sudan only 7% of teachers have had any training whatsoever, and 24,000 teachers are needed. Another focus is on the training of healthcare professionals. And in February 2010, the first ever state-registered nursing course took place or began in South Sudan.
Elder developed a pastoral component and hope to work with the bishops on an interdiocesan JPIC program focusing on healing, reconciliation and peace building. They are currently developing a policy regarding having volunteers to come for certain months of the year to meet specific needs. And one of the bishops commenting on the project said that he was inspired to see religious from different congregations, nationalities, age groups and ethnic backgrounds living and working together in one of the poorest countries in the world. Besides a professional contribution to integral human development, the most important aspect of the project, according to him, is its written style. It is a reminder to everyone, including the bishops, that Christian community, even with significant diversity, not without pain, is possible. Another example of this solidarity and fraternity, taken from work in Ireland on the whole campaign for fair trade and through fair trade to gain solidarity with the poor. In 2006, a Franciscan in Ireland, after visiting representatives of the principal groups, organizations, churches, educational centers, business associations in the town where he worked, convoked a public meeting. And he invited those who attended to consider working together to fulfill the requirements for the town to become the seventh fair trade town in the country. Seven people volunteered that day. And this began a year-long process of raising awareness on how ethical consumer choices can ensure a better deal for the poor. There are about 4,000 groups of poor producers involving thousands of workers and having a positive impact on the lives of more than 5 million people in more than 50 countries in the global south. It is present in most developed world countries with a turnover of more than 600 million euros annually, which is only 0.01% of all global trade. But the group organised themselves, they kept the local media informed and convinced a third level institution to use fair trade products in their cafeteria. With an increased demand, neighbourhood supermarkets began to stock fair trade products. As schools included this social justice dimension on the curriculum, children began to encourage their parents to buy fair trade products. People were encouraged to consider buying at least one fair trade product to show solidarity with the poor and to help them work their way out of poverty. Other towns in the region became involved. In fact, one of the members of the group embarked on a similar process in his own town, and they too acquired fair trade status the following year. At present, Ireland has 45 fair trade towns and cities, 29 seeking fair trade town and city status, and with a total of 74 active volunteer groups around the country. The initiative had further positive effects. As most of the members of the working group were committed Christians, these efforts began to make an impact on the local parishes. The diocese re-established a social justice group. As one of two priorities, they encouraged parishes to become fair trade parishes, as well as welcoming newly arrived immigrants. And the diocese eventually achieved the first fair trade diocese award in the country. Prophecy and advocacy. Religious at the UN. Religious have traditionally tended to involve themselves in frontier ministry and mission. Some countries owe a significant part of their educational and health systems to religious. There's been a growing consciousness among religious not only of the need to provide food for the hungry, but to ensure that they can access it for themselves. Congregations have appointed members and established NGOs to work at and with the United Nations. 60 congregations have some aspect of NGO status at the UN, up to and including ECOSOC status. Similarly, religious have representatives following the work of international institutions such as the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, etc., Their objective is to seek to influence policy from a gospel perspective in favour of the common good. And this arena provides a new space for evangelization. Instead of just dealing with the consequences of unjust structures or legislation, religious are increasingly becoming involved in making contributions at the drafting stages of socio-economic policy documents. An example, for example, of this work at the United Nations, the Order of Mary Immaculate, work with Indigenous peoples, also many of them work in Canada. The United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples was accepted by the General Assembly after an arduous 20-year process. Religious lobbied with others in New York in the final months before its acceptance at the General Assembly. As little as a month before, 60 countries tended towards rejecting this declaration, so a great deal of explanation and visiting country delegations and missions by the NGOs and others eventually assured that the declaration was approved. In Croatia, one of our friars received a copy of a publication on water. The Institute of Peace instead published a revised edition of this booklet for Croatia. And during their research, which included several roundtable discussions with experts, the team realized that the Croatian government was introducing legislation on water to their parliament. So the team managed to highlight some of the deficiencies in the government's national strategy, which led to a rethink in 2004. The group was the first to express concern regarding the privatization of water resources in a country that is reputed to have the richest fresh water reserves in Europe. The publicity helped galvanize Christians and other members of other faiths, including support from the Episcopal Conference and other civil societies, to work together on this issue. And the relevant government ministry invited representatives of the group and other expert advisors to become members of the National Strategy Team on Water. It is hoped that legislation will be introduced on water to the Parliament in the near future. I want to move ahead because of time and just talk about sustainability. The Sisters for the Presentation of the Blessed Virgin Mary have developed a justice network focusing on structural change through such issues as women and children, Indigenous peoples, sustainable development and human rights. There are 218 sisters of this congregation working in 38 geographic areas in 10 states in India. And the renewable energy project was initiated in 2007 in 4 locations. The people benefiting from this project bear the brunt of India's social ills. Lack of electrical power or lengthy power failures are common. And for 2 years, the sisters dialogued with leaders, co-workers, collaborators, and associates. And by September 2008, in 4 areas, they had trained leaders to create awareness about solar renewable energy, trained people in low-cost maintenance of solar panels, and provided solar-powered light and water heaters during children's study hours, and set up a low-cost solar system model in a common place. Our own friars, Franciscans in El Salvador, the Franciscan family, every year organizes an ecological march with faith communities and civil society organizations. And in 2009, the march took place shortly after the election of the new president. Several hundred people take part every year, creating a lively, colourful and carnival-like atmosphere. And over the years, the Franciscan family, its justice office, has worked on several projects for a more sustainable El Salvador, motivated by the knowledge that environmental devastation affects everyone, but more disproportionately the poor. They organise training programs in parishes with the objective of establishing ecology groups. Salvador is one of the most deforested countries in Latin America. So access to clean water is a luxury for many. Diminishing forest cover continues to be under threat from construction companies. The Franciscan family has consistently advocated for the preservation of forests, particularly El Espino, which is considered to be the lungs and the watershed of the capital of San Salvador. It has been reduced by 50% in size since 1990 because of commercial development. The new president met members of the march who requested him to declare access to water a human right, to keep the administration of water in state hands, and to introduce new laws in favour of the environment. The Legislative Assembly was also asked to enact a law prohibiting mining to protect biodiversity and to establish a number of national parks, including El Espino. And the call to prohibit mining has received the backing of the Salvadorian Episcopal Conference due to the very negative experiences in Guatemala and El Salvador. And finally, in Indonesia, in 2002, the JPIC Commission of the province in Indonesia established an eco-pastoral centre in Flores with 18 staff members. And the principal work was dedicated to helping 300 farmers improve their livelihood and raise awareness around environmental issues among young people. They wanted to help empower the farmers and to upgrade their skills and capacity in cultivating their lands so as to enhance production, which will in turn help to improve their economic situation. The use of inorganic fertilizers and pesticides has detrimentally affected the quality of the soil and the biodiversity. Contrary to the policy of the Indonesian government, the centre encourages farmers to use organic fertilizers. Farmers are also encouraged to protect forests and water resources by preparing seeds of several local trees which can help, which are helpful in protecting the water. Additionally, the Agricultural Centre is involved in eco-educational programs in 40 schools and encourages men to cultivate gardens using organic principles. And the local education authority has adopted this programme and is now promoting it as an integral part of the school curriculum. Pope John Paul said in his World Day of Peace message in 1990, reminded us that the seriousness of the ecological issue lays bare the depth of man's moral crisis. I would add that the understanding we have of ourselves, of others, of creation, and ultimately of God, is at the heart of the human and environmental crisis. Answering correctly the question asked by St. Francis, who am I, Lord, and who are you, has the potential of leading humanity, along with the whole of creation, to developing more just societies. The human person, a dependent creature, is part of and not apart from creation and its processes. Education, good catechesis, and facilitating constructive spiritual insights are fundamental building blocks in creating a just and peaceful world.
Thank you.